Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Raina Scarsa. You don't have to be. Desperate House Witches is not a G, PG, or even an R-rated show. So, bad language, bodily function, dirty talk of any kind might upset you. This is not the show for you. Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the amazingly wicked one herself, the incredible Dorothy Morrison. Please check out www.wickedwitchstudios.com for your witching needs. And the 2023 House Blessing Ornaments are available now. Go get them, buy them in pairs, because Aunt Raina always tells you, buy your balls in pairs. Check out on the social media page for www.wickedwitchstudios.com. With me for the hour, how exciting for me. Yes, I finally got her. She's been dodging me, joke, but the author of the current The Big Book of Candle Magic, the amazing Jackie Smith. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Raina. That's it. We made it. We're together.
Finally. Yay. It has been a long time in the making, but we finally got it because let me tell you what, this woman is busy.
As are you.
Coventry Creations. Oh, well, we're both busy, but you know what? I've been dying to talk to you. I'm so glad we were finally able to put it together. But you had Coventry Creations for a long time. Aren't you celebrating an anniversary?
Yeah, 3 decades, 30 years. Can you believe it's 30 years?
Oh,
we're too young to be doing this for as long as we have been.
Yeah, well, you didn't tell anybody that you started Coventry Creations when you were 5. So there you go.
I know that date keeps getting, you know, when I was celebrating my 10th anniversary, I started when I was 24, but, you know, first it was like, I started when I was in my teens and when I was 12, yep. And now it's like I started in the birth canal, you know.
Hey,
I started it in a past life.
Past life. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, you wear it well because you don't look your age for sure. That's why I said, you know, nobody knows that you started it when you were 5, which is kind of hilarious. One of the first things I ever got from Coventry Creations was joining the Witches Union.
Oh, yeah, that has been a fun and a fun evolution, the Witches Union. And that was in 2015, I think I started that. So, and it's hard to believe that 2015 was 7 years ago.
I know. It's crazy. Time flies.
That's a little rude.
But, you know, it's been a while. I know. But, hey, listen, we look good for the age of everything else around us, as I like to say. But,
yeah.
For those folks who are not familiar with you, give us some background. How did you start in witchcraft? Is it something you liked as a kid? Did you get a lot of shit from your family for it? Tell me all the details.
Well, I've always, you know, I love origin stories and especially the origin stories of modern day witches. My origin story was one that I've always loved the spiritual world. I've always loved it. I've always loved the unseen. I didn't know it was called like the metaphysical at that point. I just loved spirit. When I was a kid, I wanted, you know, you have that little list of things you wanted to be when you grow up. And on my list, this list is so funny, and I even found it a long time ago. I've since lost it again, but I had this little list I wrote, And it was, when I want to grow up, I want to be maybe a teacher. There weren't a lot of options, you know, readily for us young ladies, but teacher, maybe a nurse or a nun. I wanted to be a nun when I was like 5, 6 years old, because I was growing up Catholic, because I loved spirit. I loved that part, yeah, the mysticism of everything. And I look at that now and I giggle a little bit, but honestly, I just always loved that. And then as I got older and I realized that what nuns actually did, and I went, yeah, I don't want to do that. And then I realized what nurses actually did, and went, oh, I don't want to do that either. And then as I grew, I wanted to study. And then I saw what teachers really did, and went, I don't want to do that. At the core of what they stood for, I always loved the healing work and the teaching work and working with spirit. And so I kept searching for what that was when I was young. And I learned paranormal science is a thing. I wanted to study psychology and paranormal science, all those things that my list evolved. And then life was real when I was trying to graduate high school and realized, oh, college costs money. And there isn't any. And when in 1986, when I graduated college, there wasn't the kind of funding and grants and whatnot as there are today. So I just started trying to make money to go to college. And I was learning about, and, you know, Walden Books was a thing back then. There was no Borders. Well, there still isn't anymore. But Barnes and Nobles, or there certainly wasn't an Amazon where you could get any book that you wanted. And metaphysical, spiritual, occult bookstores were not available when we were younger. So to find anything, it was a true search. It was a true spiritual search to find anything that was outside the norm of any spiritual books or spiritual teachings at all. And you could really come across some predators for sure. And it was, so I came across the Book of Runes. Remember those first clay runes that came in like a box and it looked like a book? I think Ralph Bloom. Thank God for that, and how that was normalized early. That was one of my first things. And I found a book on dreams and Jung, you know, books that he wrote. And so these things really, the collective unconsciousness, things like that. And it kept bringing me to the very first magical book by Starhawk that I got. And then I found this book by this guy named Scott Cunningham on magical herbs. What was that about? And so all of these things. And then I came across this store in Mount Clemens, Michigan, called the Mystic Curio, and this really weird, aggressive, mean guy who owned it. And I'm like, I need to find another store like this and another store like this. And anything and everything I could get my hands on to learn more, to learn anything I could about anything. And it felt like an awakening. Everything I learned felt like another awakening. And my God, when I learned about smudging from someone, a real practitioner, who was studied with a shaman, that was like gold. And then we all gathered around this person and learned how to smudge for real. You know, it was just because they came from a class that they took with a shaman, and it was just like this golden thing that we learned, and then we hung on to that, and then we learned the next thing and the next thing, and we gathered quietly together. This was in the early 90s. There was nothing. And then we would gather in the basements and the living rooms of our friends, and then more and more stores opened up. And so in 1992 that I started Coventry Creations, because I had graduated in 86 and I was like trying to find different things and do different things. And I was making gifts for people And I was, one of them was candles, and there wasn't anything out there that had the herbs and the oils and the blessing all put together. There was like 7-day candles, and there were some pillar candles. There's the utility candles and chime candles. Chime candles kind of came later, but nobody had put all the pieces together. And I was doing that and giving them as gifts, and then people wanted more. So I made more, and then I made more. And then I would take them to stores, my crate of candles that I made, and they were really ugly at first, Rena. I mean, they were just kind of ugly. And my first several years, I printed the labels out and I put them on with rubber bands just because I didn't have enough tape. Rubber bands were easy for me to get a hold of for some reason. And I just took them store to store and went, I made these candles. You want to sell them? That was it. It was as complicated as that. And I didn't know at the time I was the only one doing that. And I just kept going. And in my innocence and my tenacity, I just kept going. And I didn't know I was starting an entire industry. I was the first one on the national market to do this. And since then, I've had plenty of very qualified people knock me off, do something like this, and large companies larger than mine continue to do variations on that theme. And I still to this day create my products in a sacred space, create my products with the authentic magical practice. We love what we do here, and we still do it the same way. So it's been that early journey. You know, I'm almost on one hand envious of folks starting their journey today because there's so much information available. But on the other hand, I really treasure the hunt.
Oh yeah. It was different then. It was very different. And I'm a bit older than you are. You're based on the West Coast. Is that right?
No, I'm in Michigan.
Oh, okay. You're in Michigan.
I'm in the Midwest, yeah. One of the heartlands of the Rust Belt of America.
Yay! Important to the growth of America and the upkeep thereof.
Yep.
Definitely. Yeah, see, on the East Coast, where I'm from, you know, we had very few and far between places to go for any supplies. This was well before internet and all of the things that we have available now. And there was a little shop called Enchantments that was started at the end of the 70s, early 80s, and you could go in and have these beautiful candles designed with your intention and all of the things. But they were not available for mail order back then. That took a long, 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 long time. So if you were lucky to find, because honestly, the folks that I came up with, old gardenerians, you know, we didn't have the time, tools, expertise to put these things together. We had to go to someone else. We just didn't have the things. So, you know, if you were lucky enough to find a small local place to go, I had Enchantments back in the early days before internet and cell phones and computers. And we were lucky to have it, very lucky. We had Magical Child, we had Enchantments. But to find someone who could do that for us was important because, again, we didn't have the tools. So it's cool that you had brought it to the national scene to where people could order them readily. That's a beautiful thing. And may I say, thank you very much for making things available through mail order. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, back in the day, I like to say I'm so old, I'm older than the internet. My staff, most of my staff is younger than my company, which makes me giggle. But I explained how I had stacks of yellow pages taller than me and stacks plural. Cause you could order a yellow page the Yellow Pages. If you don't know what that is, that is a paper phone book that is yellow. And it was yellow because yellow meant that they were business phone numbers, and you could put businesses would put advertisements in those pages. And I could order them. I could say, okay, I want a Yellow Pages from Cleveland, Ohio, or Houston, Texas, or anywhere. And I would get them. I would go like state by state, and I would get as many Yellow Pages as I could sent to me. And they would send them to me for free. And I would dig through them.
Tell people how big the books were back then. Tell them.
Depending on the city you were getting them from or the region you were getting them from, they were anywhere from, say, 2 inches to 5 inches thick. So there was a whole thing. Guys would say, I'm so strong I could tear a Yellow Pages in half. That was a thing.
That's right.
And now you know what it means, that thing. Yeah. So that's real. That dates us a bit. But I would have, for a while, I would just, you know, I would collect all these Yellow Pages because I really liked, you know, look at all this stack of Yellow Pages. And I would go through them and I would scour them to see what kind of store would potentially order my stuff. And there's times when I would get nothing out of a Yellow Pages, nothing at all. But thank goodness it's a different world today. I love this evolution, and I love how we get to evolve, and we get to be different than we were then. We get to be a lot freer. We get to be out, maybe not in every area of this country, but in where I am. You know, I call myself the first witch of Ferndale, and
cool.
And which is the town that I am, and they love it. They love. It's witch is on my business card. I'm part of entrepreneurial groups, and everyone knows me as not just a witch, but one of the witches. So I love that this is the world that I get to live in today.
Incredible. That's incredible. So
I love it.
Did you have support from your family? Did your folks know that you were a witchling? Was it something that you could talk about at home?
No. No, my mom was a very Catholic. You know, Eucharistic ministers, both of my parents were Eucharistic ministers and everything. So this was very hard for them. They were in great denial about me. Even having a business, a magical business, they were still in great denial about who I am and didn't like it. I was very much a rebel, so I challenged them in every way, shape, or form. I'm sure they cried many a tears over me. And I stressed them quite a bit. And I got a thick skin on that one. They were not supportive, and I just created my own support systems. I created my own family. I wasn't going to let it stop me.
Yeah,
I could live in that place.
I understand.
I could live in the place of hurt. Right. You can live in that place, and you can live in that place of hurt, or you could say, nope, I'm going to move on. I'm going to allow this to make me stronger, it make me who I am, and so I can be supportive of the person who needs that support.
Oh, yeah.
Both of my parents have passed on, and so it's easier to think about. I found it very intriguing how much I was able to let go after they passed. But while they were living, it was harder.
Jackie, I got to tell you, my father died in 1999, and, girl, I still haven't let it go. I'm still angry. I'm still hurt. I don't know how to shake it. I have worked on it, all the shadow work in the world, and I'm like, I'm still fucking pissed. I can't seem to let the shit go.
It's a tough one. It is a tough one. And I have worked on, it's not about forgiving them for failing me. I discovered it was about allowing them to be who they are. They could only be who they are. And that was never going to be enough for me, because I got to be who I am.
I dig it. I dig it. That's awesome. That's awesome. So let's talk about the book for a minute, because this is not your first book, and it certainly is not going to be your last, from what I can tell. So I was going through the book, and I know I called you out on it before we went on the air, because I will tell you, the book says The Big Book of Candle Magic, and I'm like, Jackie, I don't know about the title, because there's so much more in here than that. I mean, it is so not just about candle magic. It's like, and I wouldn't call you Aunt Jackie because I'm older than you, but I mean, there's what, bitch, what didn't you put in this book? I haven't found it yet. It's amazing. Are you kidding
Thank
me?
Thank you so very much.
Oh, my God. I thought it was going to be a book about candle magic, and that was it. Oh, no, no, no. Au contraire. This book has
all the stuff
everything.
Thank you. And all the stuff about candle magic is in there. If you want to skip the beginning of the book and just figure out what candle you want for this, that, and the other thing, you can skip the beginning of the book. It still stands alone as a candle magic book. It's the beginning of the book that makes it different, because you have an opportunity when you are getting ready to cast a spell, do your magical work, whatever you want to call it, say your prayers, because it's all the same stuff. You can use whatever descriptive terms you want to create a healing moment for yourself, because healing and magic are the same thing. Because you're creating change. Didn't need this spell. If you didn't, you wouldn't need this change. You wouldn't need to create this healing moment. It's all the same stuff. And you are finding and uncovering your deeper need. And that deeper need tells the tale of what you really need. It's not on the surface. It never is on the surface. The surface is a ruse. The surface is a distraction. The surface is your ego saying, don't look any deeper, because that's where the truth lies. And the truth, you're not going to like, because the truth means that you got to deal with something that you're responsible for. Nobody likes that. We all want to put the responsibility on somebody else. Can you believe what that bitch said to me? I got to get her back for something, right? I can't believe what my boss said or did. I can't believe blah, 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 blah. Because it's so much easier to make other people responsible for our pain than making than taking the power back to ourselves and saying, oh, no, I'm responsible for my own happiness and outcome. But that is where the most powerful magic is, when you awaken to that. I've been doing this for a lot of years, and when I forget that piece is when my magic fails. And so both the Coventry magic and the Big Book of Candle Magic, I can't write a magic book without that being in there, because then I would be failing you. Both of them teach you how to dig into that.
Yeah, I think people don't want to be responsible for themselves. I find that very evident in most churches, most religions, actually, which is probably part of the reason I got into the craft in the first place, because it is about self-empowerment. But self-empowerment means working on yourself, too.
You know, I'm going to push back a little bit on that, Rena. The last time I actually went to a service in a church, and I you don't catch on fire, because I've gone to different churches and I don't catch on fire, and it was for a christening, someone I love and their child, and I said, okay, I'll show up, and I listened with both of my ears and my heart at the same time, And I realized that they were talking about that. The minister was actually talking about taking the responsibility on yourself for spirit. They weren't talking about fire and brimstone. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. Now, I listened to people talking about this sermon afterwards, and they didn't hear that. They were repeating something different. And then I got an opportunity to talk to the minister afterwards, and I said, hey, I really liked your sermon, blah, blah, blah. We got talking, and then he was really surprised to find out. I'm like, oh, no, I'm a witch. I'm not here for you. I'm not here for the church. But we had a great conversation about what they were talking about. And then when I was talking to one of my employees who's Jewish, and she was talking about some of the tenets of the Jewish faith and how they're taught when she goes to temple, and they talk about questioning. And we talked about some of the things that she learns. She pulls out of temple and they go real deep. And they talk about personal responsibility, which is why she really wanted to work for Coventry, because she researched us and she read some of my books and she liked it. She goes, okay, no, I want to work for this company. So I think good church or temple or religious institution where you know, you've got a good leader, they're going to talk about that. But what people take away is what people take away. So what people talk right. about when they distill it down into the moment, it's the personal choice in that moment of, are they going to actually, is that human being going to hear the message or not? And so I don't know if the religious institutions are giving their followers the tools beyond just listening to what the minister or the rabbi or whomever is preaching at them. So
well,
I don't know if they're giving them the tools.
I don't know. You and I have very different experiences of churches, obviously. I was raised in a fire and brimstone situation, which is not fun. And being older, and this could be a difference, a generational difference, too, because back in my day, women were barely encouraged to have opinions, much less take responsibility religiously. And, you know, you would think, oh, it's New York, you've got all kinds of things going on. Yeah, if you knew where to find them. But when you're a young person, you're still living with your folks, it's a little bit different. You know, they want to indoctrinate you into what they believe. And I mean, my mother started as a witch and then rejected it. And because my father became Pentecostal and a preacher, and so did my mom. I mean, it's so convoluted. But yeah, definitely wish I'd had more of that experience than the experiences I've had. Woo! Could have been a different world, but then I wouldn't have. And I probably wouldn't be a witch. But things happen for a reason, of course. But no, it's
so
nice
you're
to
right.
see
you're
that
right, because
you heard something different. You got something out of it. You got the actual point from it. I will tell you that as someone with an elevated sense of education, which I believe you have, that's awesome. Not everyone has that.
Yeah.
You know.
I think you're right. I think it also, it depends on, you know, what part of the country you're in too. I'm with you on that. So, but again, it going back to the book and the big book of Candle Magic and what I teach in there is I really, my goal in life is to empower you, empower whomever is sitting next to me or reading the books or using my products, empower you to learn or to awaken your own magic, to be the decider of your own magic. Even in the big book of Candle Magic, I talk about how there's five different types of magic we all do. We do magic for money or some financial gain or some material gain, material thing. We do magic on safety, security, protection. We do magic about a relationship or interaction or communication with another person. It's a love magic. We do magic to heal something, and we do magic to clear something. It all comes down to one of those five things. And then as I'm writing the book to talk about this, because this is a big philosophy I've had for years, so I'm actually writing about it in the book, I was like, oh, look. Look, that's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Now, isn't it? How handy is that that somebody already has a philosophy around this that I can lean on? But it really is how we evolve to our into finding our own actualization, our big magic, our own magic. That self-actualization is like, oh, I can manifest anything. We go through that process. We cycle through all of those things. We have to heal something and clear something to then realize that we can manifest or create anything in our lives if we understand these balances. If we meet those physiological needs, which is prosperity, once those are met, then we can elevate to feeling safer in our lives and mastering those safety or protection needs. Once we master those protection needs, we can master those love needs. Once we master those love needs, then we can start to master those self-esteem needs, which are healing and clearing issues. Once we master all of those things, so it cycles around. No, it's not a straight line, but it's all a big circle, wibbly wobbly circle. But in that whole process, we are learning. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I find that people tend to want to run through these things out of a logical order. Doesn't it all start with self-esteem, or shouldn't it start with self-esteem? And let
it's
it flow
hard
from there, because I used to read tarot, and people had their main three, when I was dealing with it was usually one of three things. It was love, money, and safety. But none of those were self-esteem. And it's like, why are we not starting with the self? I don't get it.
It's hard to get there when you feel completely invalidated because you're lonely. It's really hard to feel any esteem for the self. When you don't have enough food to eat or you don't have a roof over your head, it's hard to feel value and worth. And that's what Maslow's theory was, is that until you have like a roof over your head, it's hard to start to feel safety and security. So you'll make decisions. If you are feeling very insecure as far as safety goes, like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to have a roof over my head tomorrow, and I'm very, say, food insecure and a house insecure, and this is a really bad neighborhood. Guy over there who wants to date me lives in a nice neighborhood, and he's ready for me to move in. I'm going to go ahead and move in with him. It's not the best relationship in the world, but I'm going to make this decision based on my safety and security and physiological needs, not on a love need. And it's not on a self-esteem need, because he's kind of a jerk. I know I could do better, but right now, this is the better that I need. Yeah. So Maslow talks about how it's really hard to think about a different type of security or a safety when your stomach's growling. And it's really hard to self-actualize to being the psychic or the artist or the musician when you don't know where your next meal is going to come from. So that's, and I think that works in the magical world as well. And that came, one of my magical mentors, Kevin, who has since passed on, he's the one who started me on that. When I I went to him and I'm like, man, I feel like my psychic senses are have shut down, and my magic's not working, and what do I do? And he sat me down and he said, you don't know where your next meal's coming from, Jackie. Your magic is not, and your psychic abilities are really not going to be on point when you don't know when you're going to eat or if you're going to make your house note. Focus all of your magic energy on that right now, and don't worry about the rest. And that's who taught me initially about that. He didn't call it Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I was very young. I think I was like maybe 18 at the time, but that's who brought me into that whole idea of that. And it was 100% true. And so I kind of used that philosophy for quite a while, and it really helped me get to that place of understanding and simplified it.
So these days people are very scattered, and it's everything at once. You know, we talk about the fact that we didn't have access to a whole lot of information when we were coming up. Do you think now there's too much information? Not magically necessarily. I'm just saying, with being bombarded, I find that one of the biggest complaints I hear from people is that they have a real lack of focus. And I think it's because of so much input, don't you?
I think universally right now we're on information overload. I would not have described myself as an ADD kid. Not at all. It was not a problem that I have. I am an ADD adult.
Yeah.
I find myself struggling with that. We are on information overload. I missed what
but
you said.
What
did you say again?
No, I was just agreeing with you. I think, you know, it's hard to focus, especially magically, when you have your head full of so many things at once and so many things are calling for our attention. That's one of the great things about this book. It helps you focus. It helps you bring in all of the things, not just candles, obviously, because you cover so much in this book. It can actually give you a roadmap. And here, do you have these things available? Put these things with this particular spell, or these particular herbs, or these particular crystals. I mean, you super cover everything. I don't know how you got it all in one book.
That was my goal, is to give somebody, I wanted you to be able to open up your magical cupboard or your magical junk drawer or your own herb cupboard, whatever, go in your backyard. What have I got today? Mm-hmm. What am I dragging through the garden? And what is my need, and how can I make this work? We usually have exactly what we need around us to make that spell work. I've not run across a moment where I didn't have 90% of what I needed. And there's stuff that, like, if I want these last two items to make it perfect. But sometimes when you go to the store, your favorite metaphysical store, spiritual store, they just don't have that last ingredient. So what are you going to get? And I wanted a guide, a book that you could take with you, go, okay, well, they don't have basil. Who doesn't have basil? But I'm just pulling that one out. So what can I use instead? They don't have the spot. And stones are something that I'm noticing over time that certain stones are just not available anymore. So I like, you got to have options.
Definitely. It's good to have options, especially if you can't get out for whatever reason, during the pandemic, it was a problem getting so many different things. so many different ingredients. We all had to make do. Depending on whatever spell you were casting, you actually had to make substitutions for a lot of different things. I remember getting cloves being a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some odd things that, who knew that that was going to, who knew that I couldn't get my hands on some flour. But one of the things I think is super unsung is using your tarot in your spell, in your candle spell.
Uh-huh.
Your tarot has such a powerful thought forms behind it for, you know, hundreds of years. It's an agreed upon power behind each image, even if, or each name of the card. The Seven of Swords means the Seven of Swords for forever. And so if you use that card for that meaning in this spell, it is going to tell that energy exactly what to do. So you can create a storyboard with your tarot and tell it exactly what to do. And really fine tune. It works really well.
Everyone tells me, everybody's like, why are you not using your tarot when you're doing spells? I'm like, I don't know. It never occurred to me. And now everyone is telling me, incorporate.
Now,
what are you doing? I'm like, oh, my gosh.
I have a deck that's for tarot, for candle magic, and it's not the deck that I read with. So I think that might, for some people, when I talk about that, they don't want to put the tarot deck that they read within their spell, which I completely agree with, because that's a different energy.
I understand. I mean, I've got 18 decks over there. I could pick something else. It just never occurred to me that that was something to do.
It was a the deck that I finally started using for spell work is the one that some of the cards were missing, and you know, you don't realize a card's missing until one day you're looking for the card and you're like, what the, and the deck has to agree to you to be used as a spell deck. It's kind of interesting. Some of the decks, they don't want to be a spell deck. Because you know how they get personalities. You know that, Raina. You're like, I don't want to read for that person. I don't want to do that.
See, I internalize it. I'm like, we're not working for you today, bitch. Move on to the next deck. You know? I never look at it as they're rejecting the person I'm reading for. Unless the person's me. So maybe it's a complex. I don't know. It could be.
That's funny.
No, but I do love the fact that you put in so much in this book. I mean, it's stonework, it's tarot, it's astrology, it's, you know, herbs, fragrances, flowers, you name it, it's in here. This is damn good. I'm just saying.
I even have a way to use dice, so I love that when I'm going to do a spell, I ask if I should be doing this spell. Is this a good spell to do? And what is the potential repercussions of this spell? There's a whole section in that on using dice, pendulum, tarot cards to ask about that spell. I learned that from African traditional religions when I was initiated into, partially initiated into one of them. And that's what they teach you before you even go in front of the Orisha. You ask, can I go in front of the Orisha? Can I ask for this reading? Is it a good idea to get this reading? Is it a good idea to make this offering to this Orisha? What are the repercussions of me doing this? Oh, it is a big deal. And so I didn't bring in their closed tradition. I brought in the idea Because I was taught that from a voodoo practitioner, and I was taught that from another shaman, from others. So that is a practice in many of the living practices that got lost over time, is that before you do any work, you ask usually your ancestors, hey, is this a good idea? I might feel a little vengeful today. Maybe I should step back and ask if this is a good idea. There's a way of,
makes perfect sense. I've been told to create havoc if I do this. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I've done some shit. Yeah. You're right.
This is a great idea to do this spell. Is this spell complete? Is there anything I need to add? Is there too many things in here? I'm of the school personally, if one ingredient is good, then 7,000 must be better. So, and I usually have to edit back. Uh-huh. I edit back because I add ingredients like a damn boss. And so I like the chamomile in this one, and then I like the vanilla in there too. And I don't know, let's just put some cinnamon in there to blow that shit up. I usually have to edit back, and then I'll use dice or coins or tarot, a pendulum. But I love my pendulum, but I can manipulate my pendulum. I have to back off.
Gotcha. You can't stack the deck, Jackie.
I got to, sometimes if I'm using my pendulum and I'm like, let me double check. Because I'm making that thing swing to the left a little too easy.
Gotcha. Yeah, I understand. It's amazing. You forget your own power sometimes and you're like, is this for real? Do I need a double check on this?
Mm-hmm. The dice are powerful. I was testing. I'm writing this, and I've been using dice for a while. And I said, well, let me compare. Like, so I did. I threw a couple of tarot cards, and then I threw the dice against it. And I was like, oh, fine. Tell me about myself then. when you're like confirming your stuff, and as you're writing, you're like, well, shit. I love this world because it just, you'd start doubting it and then it just smacks you in the back of the head like a goddamn brick. And it says, you're going to question me some more? I was sitting with a shaman. She is just amazing. And, she was teaching me how to use dice in a wooden bowl to read, and it was just a half hour, and I wish I had been able to write it all down and learn from that, and wow, because that was, I didn't know dice could be so powerful as a divination tool, and I look forward to being able to learn from her again.
I have not employed any of that, and I need to. And I know there's dice in this house because I have a gamer that lives in this house with me. So I'm going to have to sneak into someone's room when they're not looking and grab that bag. I'm telling you. Oh, wow.
I did wonder if, because I just was using a regular six-sided dice, and I wondered how much more interesting it would be if you had different-sided dice. Wouldn't it be just fascinating? Actually, I did, in my research, I did come across on Etsy, someone has a divination system with 20-sided dice. Of course they do.
Yeah,
of course there's someone who's brilliant like that.
As long as you have gamers and infinite possibilities, I'm fascinated by the whole dice situation. I've never done this. So I'm going to try it. I think that's, new thing, old dog, new trick. Just saying, no matter how
yep.
long you have been in the game, this book is going to teach you something. I'm just saying. This book is hilarious and fantastic.
Good. Some other cool things about this book is I teach you how to, like, get a little dramatic with your candle magic without necessarily burning the place down. But, like, you can do really interesting things without ever lighting the candle. I mean, you can break it, especially if you have a 7-day, if you're gonna break the glass. You can put different pizzazz in there and how to choose a candle for what purpose. There's lots of really cool stuff about that. What color to pick, what shapes, different shapes of candles mean, how you can use them, how will they burn, just really interesting things like that, as well as how to keep a magical journal so you can look back on it later and say, how to dig deep into what you really need, but then also keep that magical journal so later on you can look back and say, so why did I do that? How'd that work out for me?
I'm
shit at journaling too, but I inconsistent at best, but I've got 30 years of inconsistent journals and there are gems in each and every one of them.
That's cool. I should just write shitty journals and they'll be okay because there'll be nuggets of stuff in them. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Really, you know, I wrote an incantation like 12 years ago in a little book. And I still have the little book. And maybe I should just reopen that thing and keep going from there. It's never too late to start, right?
Right. My best journals were the crappy ones I got at the dollar store. If it's too mm-hmm. pretty, I didn't want to write in it. The uglier the better. Just write in streams of insanity. And remember, when you're doing candle magic, you're using all the elements. It takes all the elements to make a candle. It takes all the elements to use a candle. So you're getting all the magic. You know, not just the flame, but the wax is earth. You're having heaven and earth meet each other as the candle burns down. The flame turns that earth element molten into water. You need the air to feed the flame, and then as the wax evaporates and gets consumed, it turns into air. You get all the elements. Isn't that powerful?
Yeah, very. That's amazing. And stuff I never think about. And if I don't think about, listen, I'm nobody and I know nothing, but I know if I didn't think about it, there's other people who didn't think about it. Not every witch knows everything. So I'm big on people learning stuff. I'm constantly learning stuff.
Candle magic is transformation. So if you want to transform something in your life, candle magic is the way to go. I have not thought of any other magical tool that is as transformative as that. That's why we all love it so much. That it represents our spirit.
Definitely. I agree. I also find fire mesmerizing, period, on its face, you know. It's alive and it can kill you at any minute. It's kind of a cool thing. I don't have a death wish. Stop thinking that. But it's, you know, there's just so much more to it. You know, when I was first told that, well, first of all, no one admitted to me that witchcraft was even being practiced by my grandmother until after she had died. And candle magic is what they did. And it just didn't occur to me how much could be involved. Because, you know, in my family, they would sit around, they would write something down, they'd light a candle. They take the piece of paper, fold it, stick it in the flame, stick it in the ashtray, and watch that shit burn, and things would happen. I'm like, my grandmother had some powerful fucking mojo. I did not get that level of mojo. I don't know if it's her, it was her level of intent or her absolute belief or what, but I think everyone starts for the most part with candle magic, don't they?
Well, happy birthdays. That's some of our first bits of magic, blowing out your birthday candle and making your wish.
Uh-huh.
I think you have a different style and brand of magic than your grandmother. I think you do.
Okay, thank you.
You manifest different things for different people. I don't know if you manifest. You do a different thing. Your grandmother had a real specific gift, but you, I see you, your magic is a different color or a vibration than your grandmother's, but equally as potent. Look at where you are right now on the radio and with thousands of people being informed and influenced by you. You are a charmer. You are a charmer of the masses. And that is super important.
Oh, wow. Okay, thank you. It's a compliment. I don't know if you're right, but I certainly appreciate you saying that.
You have a big role in this universe, and you are filling it in an amazing way. And your grandmother, I just feel, is smiling at you with all of her heart.
Thank you. That's very meaningful.
I bet you if you ask her, if you're going to put write something down and light it, put it in the candle flame, if you ask for her to help you manifest it, it will come true. What's her name?
Wow. You know what I'm going to do?
Mm-hmm.
She was her name.
Okay.
I'll do that tonight, actually. I appreciate that. That is so kind. Thank you. I have not.
You're very welcome.
That means a lot to me. It really does, because I always wanted her level, and you're telling me not to be concerned about her level, be concerned about my own level, and I appreciate that so much that I have received the message. Thank you.
Lucy loves you a lot.
I love her too, and I miss her horribly all the time. But I know she's here because she's keeping me safe. Because I'm not good at doing it myself. I'm bad about getting into situations. But Jackie, I have talked your ear off for an hour already. And before we go, just want to remind people, the Big Book of Candle Magic, it's a lot more than candle magic. So don't just think, oh, well, I already have books on candle magic. No, you don't have this book. This is the book. So get this book. Jackie, how can people find you?
They can find me at CoventryCreations.com. They can find me on Coventry Creations and all the socials, Coventry Candles, Coventry Creations, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all the socials. And you can find me at your favorite spiritual bookstore, metaphysical gift store. Look for me in your local area. And if you don't find Coventry's products or the Big Book of Candle Magic, ask for me. Maybe they have me hidden away in the back. Or they can get products in. At CoventryCreations.com, you can find a store locator to find a store in your area, because we love sending people local to shop. And if you don't have a local store, you can also find us on Amazon and Etsy and lots of places. We're everywhere. And we make
you
all of our
everywhere.
Products in the sacred space. We
awesome.
Do what we say we do. We make our products here in a sacred space here in Ferndale, Michigan. And we hire people at a living wage. And we have a safe working environment and a very diverse working environment for all genders, ages, and races. So we're really
That's
proud
wonderful.
Of who we are and what we do.
That's awesome. And as a community, we are proud of you too. Jackie, thank you so
much
for spending some time with me from your crazy ass schedule, because I know your schedule is crazy.
we reflect each other in our fun busyness.
Yes.
I love it. Thank you so much, Marina, for having me on. What a blessing this has been. What a joy.
Well, you are a complete blast. I love speaking with you. We've got to do it again, all right?
Yep, let's book it. Let's get our schedules in sync. You have a great afternoon.
You too.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. That's it for today. Join me on Friday with Storm Sestavani, amazing astrologer. We're going to have a great time. Talk to you Friday. Bye.